don't know much biology.
Well, a topic that will definitely percolate through, I think, most conversations as we head into, well, not yet, but almost the next school year, is ChatGPT and AI, and how much do you allow your high school students or college students to use ChatGPT and AI? Do you know they're using it? Are you suspecting that they're using AI, and is that good or bad for them? Well, Dan Ulan is founder of Elite Student Coach. It's a program that specializes in working with college-bound teens, helping them gain admission to top-tier schools. He has a master in psychology. He's worked with students. He knows all about the onslaught of ChatGPT and artificial intelligence and the effect that it's having on students, and Dan joins us now. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
Well, before I was in radio, Dan, I was homeschooled, so I tutored, I helped homeschool students, and stayed involved in teaching writing and literature up until 2019, and I am horrified by ChatGPT and artificial intelligence, and it's brain rot. I'm freaking out, Dan, so I guess we'll start here. Should parents be horrified by ChatGPT, or at the very least, suspicious of it?
It's a great question, and I'm intrigued by the use of your word onslaught of it. You know, they shouldn't be horrified. It's here to stay. It's actually been here for quite a while, and I think we just need to embrace it rather than be afraid of it. It's transforming the economy, and I think what parents need to be aware of, and the kids as well, is that as it transforms the economy, it's not whether or not you should use it. It's how you use it. And not leaning into it. And I also come from a teaching background. That was my very first, my very first job was party magician, but then after that, teacher. So as a teacher, I'm suspicious of it as well. Can I give you a couple of examples of how not to use it? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, great. So I think that as AI transforms the economy, the kids who are going to really not just survive, but thrive are the kids whose soft skills, particularly the communication skills, the ability to communicate with impact and emotional resonance on paper, in person, persuasion, negotiation, emotional intelligence, all of those are going to be the ones who really will do really well, not only in school, but in life and in their professional careers. And I say that because chat makes it very easy to knock out a paper or knock out a proposal by just inserting a few queries. But what that also means is that ability to communicate person to person, like we're doing right now, to have those real emotional interactions with other people is going to be even rarer. And so those kids who are able to find a way to leverage their interactions with the machine, with chat, and boost their ability to communicate are going to be at an even greater premium. So those who can talk to the machine and learn how to query, ask very intelligent queries of chat, are going to be the ones who do really well. So I think that parents should be aware of chat, be wary of the fact that it's easy for their kids to lean into having chat just write papers for them, but use chat instead as an intelligent, I'm going to paraphrase somebody who was on a TED Talk recently, and he used the term coexisting with a new digital species. That's kind of what it is. It's here to stay, but it's like a very, very smart baby that gets smarter with the questions that we ask it. And as we ask it more intelligent questions, we can get smarter we can get smarter as we interact with it. And I think kids who learn that will become more empowered to become better students and better citizens of the world.
So then I get what I'm hearing is that the onus is on parents to make sure their kids are not using ChatGPT to crank out a paper for them when they should be doing it for themselves, which is fine. But I don't know how involved are parents realistically going to be? Meaning, so I guess the question is, how do teachers figure out if a paper is, you know, something, an assignment that a student has done has been done by ChatGPT, or if they worked it out for themselves? Because it seems like kids are going to still find a workaround and use the workaround in the meantime until there's a good way to police it?
It's a fantastic question. And kids are, look, kids are boundary testing machines held together by electrons, right? That's essentially what their purpose in life is to find boundaries and find their place in the world. And so there are always going to be workarounds. You know, parents who struggle with kids using their phones or devices too much will sort of lock up those devices at night. The kids are escape artists. They're going to find ways to do that. Same thing holds true. And this goes to your excellent question, Chris, that parents, I think parents should become more informed with chat. Just play with it. There's a free version of chat. I think the pay to play version is $20 per month. It's reasonably inexpensive, but parents can become more informed with how it works as well. And I think also just, it's also on the onus of the schools. So the schools are becoming, and I'm talking about high schools, middle schools, colleges as well, are becoming a lot more wary of saying, look, you can't use this to write a paper, or you can use it to structure a paper to ask some questions, but you cannot use it for any of the writing. Now, there are always going to be some students who are going to try and cheat their way through. But the students who get it understand also that it's pretty easy to detect it. There are some things that, and I'm sure, Chris and Amy, I'm sure you've both played with chat. Am I going out on a limb, probably not too far to guess that you've played with it a little bit?
Of course.
Okay, great. So you know that when chat writes something for you, it has that certain feel that chat, it's kind of like canned air. It smells a little bit chatty, like mm-hmm. It's a little too perfect. It's pretty good. And it's getting more and more human. It sounds more and more human, but it's not human. Yeah. So as you learn to cultivate your own voice as a writer, whether you're, you know, 10 years old or 12 years old or whatever it is, you start getting more satisfaction and feeling like, listen, I know how to write. And one of the things that I tell all the kids with whom I work, whom I mentor, and I work with kids as young as 8 and as old as 29, is that if you're scared of writing, if you can talk, you can write. If you're speaking to me now, you can write. So if you lean into just your ability, your natural ability to speak, you can write. Where I think chat becomes a very, very useful tool is when you use it to help you brainstorm or outline an idea mm-hmm. or bounce ideas off a wall. It's very, very good at helping you think through a number of different options. Will it write a paper for you? Yeah. Will it write a resume for you? There's certain things that tasks that it's very useful for. But when it comes to school, nothing will take the place of sort of that good, right. Hard thinking.
Yeah. And the same thing with actually reading. I can talk to a kid and know pretty quickly if this is a child who reads extensively or a child who doesn't read at all, because their language is different. The less you read, the more you conform to your immediate surroundings and the way those people communicate, which is why you have like Skibidi Toilet, and kids who have that language.
I love Skibidi Toilet.
They have
toilet.
That language. That,
who doesn't?
Yes, I think it's brilliant,
and
actually.
That humor. But you have to cultivate the ability to read, the ability to think critically, or even, Ranj and I have talked about this, the ability to break up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend in person and not use ChatGPT. Otherwise, all of those life skills, if you pawn them off to a ChatGPT, you're not developing them.
Yeah, and it's beautifully said. And I think, you know, having grown up in the 70s, and I was just always a reader. I loved reading. Mm-hmm. And great readers make great writers. And it doesn't mean that you have to sit down and read Anna Karenina. You can read a short book. And I think that when kids go back and they actually start reading again and discover, oh my gosh, like I actually like reading and watching the way that different people read, whether it's Jack London or somebody who's writing in a magazine or somebody who's writing a blog, when you absorb different styles in the way that people read, you actually absorb that and become a better writer. That's one thing. So I know I sound like the old man on the lawn kids these days read, but
it's my favorite guy.
it's fantastic. And
she identifies with him.
I identify with that guy.
Well, there's also a thing, look, kids have to read in school. There was that article that came out a few months ago. I don't know if you saw it. I think it was from a professor at Columbia who was interviewed. I want to say it was for The Atlantic, but I could be wrong. And the professor said, I'm only assigning one book this semester because kids will not read any more than that. Now, these are kids at Columbia. And it sounds weird and horrifying, but again, where are these kids coming from? They're coming out of high school. But it's an easy fix. Look, kids are very, very, very smart. And the thing that I always say to the kids with whom I work, my mentees, is I'm older than you. I'm not wiser than you. I'm just older. I have more miles on my tires. So let me bring lessons that I learned later in life to you earlier, like reading, you can write quickly. You can write quickly. Writing doesn't have to be hours and hours of labor. You can write quickly. It doesn't necessarily mean that the quality is not going to be there. It's same thing with reading. You can read very quickly. So, for example, one of the, I don't like to call it a hack, but it's a trick that I like to use with some of these kids is that, let's say for a school assignment, it doesn't work with math text or science text, but let's say it's a history text. You can get an audiobook for anything, or you can have you can have your iPad or something, your reader do this for you. If you listen to the audiobook or the audio transcription of something that you're reading at 2.5x or 3x as you're reading it, because we subvocalize a lot faster than we read. So if you listen to the audio version of the thing that you're reading and you read it at the same time, your attention level goes up something between 450 and 600%. That's a crazy, crazy high retention level. And when I throw that out to my kids and their parents, they're like, yeah, that can't work. It does, because it hits two different parts of your brain. And then we all know this, like kids' brains are wired differently than adult brains. The neuroplasticity of the teenage brain means that kids are learning at least 35 to 40 times the rate of an adult brain. So their ability to absorb information, that starts to flatten out, that curve starts to flatten out for men at about 25 and for women at about 27. So that's why kids experience that sort of brain freeze. So when you give them these things that make it easier for them to understand, look, it doesn't mean like I've got to sit down and take hours and hours and hours to write a paper, or hours and hours and hours to read something. Make it easier. Give me a fast way to hit a home run. When they have those early successes, that only helps them feel empowered. It's like learning to source self-esteem from within rather than seeking it from without. It's the learning equivalent of that. Then when they start interacting with chat, it becomes a much richer experience for them. Then they're learning to ask questions that help them think around problems and look around corners in a different way, rather than having chat do the heavy lifting. They're doing the heavy lifting themselves, and feeling good about it, and then using chat as an intelligent assistant.
As we say goodbye here, I guess the what I'm taking away now from you is that we are not necessarily headed toward idiocracy. Is that correct? Because
no, we can be if that's where we want to go.
I think that's where we're going.
Oh, well, okay. So I don't know. You gave me you made me feel a little more hopeful about it. So I guess that's my takeaway.
As long as you're saying cultivate the classic skills of reading, writing, and communicating, and once you have cultivated those kind of the old-fashioned way, you can start to integrate AI as a tool instead of a substitute.
This is the optimistic view. It feels like.
It is. I think it's not only the optimistic, I think it's the realistic view. And the thing is that kids are already reading and writing. They're already doing it. They're just tuning up something that they're already doing. And I think that's a big that will help remove the fear and install a lot more hope and help us coexist with this digital species that is transforming the economy and the world as we know it.
Dan Ulin, founder of Elite Student Coach. This is really interesting stuff, and we appreciate you talking with us about it today. Thank you for
Thanks
making
so much
us feel
for having
a bit
me.
Better.
Great pleasure. Bye for now.
Dan Ulin with us. That is a really, and the thing about reading and also listening to the audiobook at the same time never even occurred to me to do it. I'll either do one or the other. I mean, if I'm in the car, it's the book, it's the audiobook, or reading like Andrew Stoll's. I'll listen to it, and if I'm home, I'm reading it. I've never done both.
Let's continue this because I have like a fun anecdote with that. We want to hear from you. 314-436-7900.
Are your kids dumb? Is that the question?
The conversation continues.
Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you. We just chatted with Dan Ulin, founder of Elite Student Coach. It's a program helps college-bound teens gain admission to top-tier schools. We were talking about the role that ChatGPT plays in students' lives today. I think for the most part to their detriment. But Dan said something really interesting about comprehension, reading comprehension, that if you listen to an audiobook, even if you speed up the audiobook a bit and follow along as you read, that you actually can increase and accelerate your comprehension rate.
This is something like 400 to 500%.
Yes. So what's so crazy is, obviously, I'm pretty old school. I've listened to audiobooks in the car or on walks, you know, running, listen to audiobooks. And I love that, or like you, or you read. But I never did both at the same time until this year. So I did this thing called Bible Study Fellowship, and we were studying the book of Revelation. If anyone who's read the Bible knows, Revelation is like pretty dense. It's hard to understand a lot of it. You're like trying to figure it out. And I would read it, and because it's there's a lot of details about sizes and measurements or chronological details about what's going to happen, then another thing will happen. It was just hard to keep track of. So I started listening to it while I read it. And Ranj, I literally told my mom, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am listening to this book while I read it. And I feel like it's sticking with me. So I did the whole study that year listening to it while I read it. And I know it's anecdotal, but it worked for me because it was pretty dense.
Yeah.
And it stayed with me. And I, you know, like, don't you pride yourself on being a good reader? Well, I guess, although I've gotten worse at it. But, you know, it's ever read like a science textbook or maybe a really dense history book. And you're like, I cannot, like, my mind is wandering. It was like hyper focus.
It didn't even occur to me to do it. And it's a really good idea. And clearly it works. And again, yours is an anecdote, but mm-hmm. he says it works. You know, we talked to Dan about it. He says it works. And you've had the same experience.
Robert.
I was just going to say, Robert is watching us on YouTube, said he went back to school when he was 40. Having struggled with reading comprehension forever, the ability to read and listen to the text at the same time was amazing for me. It just didn't even occur to me to do it. Because I'll get an audiobook. And sometimes I think if you have the right subscription, you get both, don't you? Like if you have a Kindle, they'll give you the Kindle version and then the audiobook goes along with it. Or you might have to pay separately. I don't know. But I have done both where I've been in the car listening to it and then finishing when I'm mm-hmm, at home, like mm-hmm. reading at home, and it kind of picks up where you left off in the audiobook version. Never occurred to me to do both at once. And I can absolutely see that being beneficial because it kind of forces you to pay attention.
Yeah, it does. It just helps focus your brain. And if you're wondering, well, that's not AI. You're right. That's a different conversation. We were talking about building foundational skills like comprehension and communication and to approach schoolwork kind of the old fashioned way until the kids have these skills that are strong enough that they can then incorporate AI as a tool. But another thing, okay, having homeschooled, we had a different approach to grades than a lot of kids in school do, which is like, just get the grade, right? You just want the passing grade. I don't, you know, he talked about workarounds and, you know, kids, obviously, a lot of kids talk about cheating or doing the least amount of work possible. With homeschooling, you were kind of, it was a complete disincentive to cheat because what are you, your mom? Like you're going to cheat. Your mom's going to be like, oh, wow, you got an A. Like it wasn't like you were trying to pull one over on the teacher's eyes. Like your mom was so involved with your homework that she would know that if day in and day out you kind of struggled in something and then suddenly managed an A, she would know you're cheating. I mean, there was no point in cheating. And one of the reasons why, too, like you would not cheat in homeschooling is your work was, you viewed your work as, I'm doing this to better myself. Like it was a character approach to things. Like this is my job to read, to write, to work. I want to know these things. I don't want to be exposed as an idiot. Like cheating just never even occurred to me. And I do think that when it comes to parents, as you said, you can't monitor their screens 24/7. But I do think that ChatGPT and AI makes it that much more imperative for parents to really put the focus on why school is important and why you don't want to just cheat your way through the system and not actually be a good communicator, not actually have reading comprehension, saying, listen, good grades are great, but what's most important is that you have these skills, that you know these things. This is the job that's put in front of you. You need to do it for you. Have some self-respect. I think that conversation becomes much more important when the ways of cheating are so prevalent, so convenient, and so easy. You almost have to say, I kind of like say no to drugs, right? Well, kids are going to do drugs. You can say don't do drugs, but you can also try to instill in them a value system where they wouldn't want to do those things.
That's the thing.
You almost have to take that approach.
Yeah, it is difficult to do that. And it's just going to have to be a job that parents will have to take on for themselves.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean approaching the character versus monitoring?
Right. Well, yes, or the usefulness of it, the utility of it, to say you are going to need these skills later in life. You know, this is important that you learn to do it this way. But I know it's a difficult lesson to impart, because sometimes when you are in class and you're learning certain math skills, you are thinking to yourself, when am I ever going to use this?
Right.
Like, I am not going to use this in real life. So that is a difficult chore, but I guess as a society, we kind of have to do it.
It's a muscle. You're training your muscle. If you work through these problems, you can work through other problems later in life. That type of thing.
Cardinals are off for the next couple of days because of the All-Star break. Home Run Derby is tonight, by the way.
Oh.
And we've got the Gas House Gang coming up at 12 o'clock. Polo Asensio and me will be with you from 12 to 1 talking Cardinals baseball. We'll have the first draft pick, the number 5 overall pick for the Cardinals, Liam Doyle, will join the show. Derek Gould will be on with us. So you want to listen from 12 until 1. When we come back, Scott Warman. Talk a little Cards baseball with us next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Pitch is grounded to the left side. So JC has it. He goes over to first. And he is out. And it's a save by Ryan Helsley. The Cardinals hang on and win 5-4.
Chris and Amy, 104.1 FM, KMOX. It is All-Star break. Cardinals will get back at it on Friday when they will play in Arizona to open a series against the Diamondbacks. In the meantime, Home Run Derby tonight, the All-Star game itself. Actually, tomorrow, Brendan Donovan is the Cardinals' lone representative in that game. Time to go to the guest line. This morning, we bring in studio host on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, Scott Warman, who covers Cardinals baseball and Blues. And Scott is with us now on KMOX. How are we doing, friend?
Doing pretty good after a long day, which I'm sure you can attest to one time or another in your career.
Oh, man. The best were the doubleheader days with also multiple rain delays. Those were awesome.
I think Chip added it up. We almost had 4 hours of rain delay yesterday, but who's counting? Hey, we'll stay all night for a Cardinal win, Ronchi and Amy.
I'll tell you what, I was leaving for, was I going to Tampa? I can't remember where I was leaving for a flight one time, and I had booked this later flight on a Sunday right into the All-Star break, you know? And the game, I'm not kidding you, went 19 innings. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I got to get out of here. At any rate, so we're at All-Star break, the official first half of the season, even though the Cardinals have already played, 97 games here. Just your general thoughts on what this team is in 2025.
I think this team is better than anybody had anticipated. Except for those guys and those coaches in that locker room. I think they've played much better baseball than anyone had anticipated. And I think we have seen some great moments. I mean, especially look back at May. It was a terrific month. We've had some low moments. It's all part of a whole 162-game season. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. But at the end of the day, I've been really impressed with the way that this team has played the game. Sure, does this team probably run out of gas here, and they sorely need a break, especially with all the injuries. I think Ollie was down to like one or just two guys on the bench in yesterday's game because of all the injuries. And, yeah, we've seen some downsides to a couple of the Cardinals starters. Can that retune itself? Obviously, Miles Michaelis, I thought, had a really nice bounce back in his start on Thursday. You hope that can continue. But the thing of it is, more than anything else, and I say this to everybody, and I get Amy and Chris your thoughts. I mean, before the season, do you really honestly believe the Cardinals would be right there for a wild card spot as we headed to the All-Star break? I don't think many people, if any, did.
Game and a half back of an All-Star spot right now, or excuse me, a playoff spot right now. And no, I mean, I guess it was always possible just because of the nature of the Central Division that it always seems to be winnable unless you're the Pirates.
And they have the best pitcher in the game.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
That's the way I've always looked at it is, if a lot of things go right, certainly, but if I had to guess, I would not have picked that they would be 500 in a game and a half out of a playoff spot right now.
Amy?
No, I wouldn't have guessed it. Although this is where Ronj and I feel like we differ a little bit. I feel like this team is weird, kind of with the all or nothing play. I feel like they either look great and you feel like, oh my gosh, this team is going to make that playoff run. And then they get shut out 3 games in a row. So I know Ron just said like a lot of teams that are right on the fringe, kind of middle of the road,
mediocre team
will have these big swings. I feel like it's a weird team. Obviously, at the beginning of the season, a lot of their losses were close, but I just feel like it's been a pendulum swing, like that pirate skiff ride at Six Flags. Like, that's how the Cardinals have managed to get this record. Well, they're one game out of a wild card spot, is through that pirate skiff ride of just heavy swings, playing great or playing really poorly.
Yeah, no, and that's honestly what we've had here lately. Like I said, you know, you deal with a lot of the injuries that they've been dealing with, and guys have been in and out of the lineup. And again, getting a little bit more consistency, especially from your starting rotation. But you've even seen blips on the screen as far as the bullpen is concerned, too. So you're going to have to definitely have that when you hit the second half of the season. But I think more than anything else is, you know, for me, old school guy, whatever, you know, grew up watching Whitey ball. To watch this team, and I've mentioned this on our air several times, is the fact that just to watch this team play from a fundamental standpoint, they're one of the best defensive teams in all of baseball. So that's very helpful when you have a starting rotation, really almost the entire pitching staff, with the exception of Helsley. You know, they're more pitch to contact, as we say. They're not going to have a ton of strikeouts. So that's worked to the Cardinals' advantage. And you've seen improvements, especially with guys when Walker's been healthy out in the outfield, along with Victor Scott II. But also just even yesterday, the Cardinals have 5 stolen bases, which is kind of Whitey Ball-esque, if you will, even Tony La Russa-esque. But even just the first run you have on a grounder that goes off the glove of the starting pitcher, and Mason Wynn just hustles his rear end around third and makes it home on an infield single. I like that. And I think that's what I think has been pretty exciting. The other part of it, and I don't think we've seen this over the last couple of years, is the fact that the Cardinals, they're almost like a never say die. How many, what did we have last, yesterday was, I think, the Cardinals' 24th comeback win already of the season. So I think that you see right there is a great attitude that you have in the locker room, and a never say die attitude. And I think that's what's been really kind of exciting for me to watch this ball club, because again, I think many people didn't think that this would be the situation that they're in as we head into the All-Star break.
Scott Warman, so we are now at the All-Star break, which means we're not too far away from the trade deadline, just a couple of weeks away from that. You know, we have a texter who is texting into the show now and wondering what you think's going to happen. Are we going to see the Cardinals deal anyone away or deal for somebody?
It's a great question, and I think we're all sitting there waiting to see if something will happen. I know John Mozeliak was asked this when the Cardinals were in Chicago last weekend, the weekend before last, I should say. And, you know, he's going to wait this thing out to see what they do once the second half starts. And if they're in it, he felt and he got the indication that he would give the leeway to add to this team. And I've also been told by someone else within the organization, they also believe that the ownership will give Mo the leeway to add to this team. And obviously, I think we can all agree it would probably be pitching would be the number one stalwart that you would get, unless you get a big injury with one of your top players. So all those indications tell me that, yes, I think the Cardinals will go out and probably try to make a deal to add if they're still in that playoff race for a wild card spot here in a couple of weeks. And you really, we mentioned this on the show yesterday, Chris and Amy, is the fact that you look at the schedule, it really kind of works to the Cardinals' favor if they take advantage of it. You got an Arizona team that's under 500 when you go on the road, Colorado, who might be a record worst team in Major League Baseball history. Then you come back and San Diego comes to town. They haven't been playing great despite their great start to the season. And then Marlins are in town after that. So you take advantage of that, you're sitting right there. Now, if the Cardinals are out of it, the other question is, can they become sellers? And to be honest with you, I don't think you're going to see the Cardinals do any selling. Now, again, I could be wrong, but I just don't see that scenario coming up. And obviously the first name that crops into everybody's mind, especially what happened this past offseason, is Nolan Arenado. And all indications are, despite his injury situation right now, Nolan has been really excited about what has happened with this ball club and how they've competed so well this year. So I would say if it's the other part where will the Cardinals be sellers, yeah, they might make a couple of trades, but I don't think if you would look at it from a massive trade standpoint, I kind of doubt that would happen.
Helsley, Matz maybe? I mean, those seem like candidates.
Helsley, I don't – that would be a tough call. I think Matz would be a definitely good call because I think you could get a lot for Steven Matz. I mean, you know this, Ronj. Yeah. Everybody's always looking for a left-hander, and that guy is very valuable. I know that, you know, there's been talk of maybe him sliding into the starter's role, but I know Ollie's a big fan and really likes to utilize him a lot or as much as he can out of the bullpen. He's really been impressed with what Matz has done out of the pen this year. So that might be a guy where if you do wind up being quote-unquote a seller, that you could probably get a nice little haul for him.
Yeah, that would be I think it'll be a fascinating next couple of weeks, even if nothing happens for the Cardinals. I know it sounds strange to say because it's usually interesting when there's action, but I think just trying to figure out what they're going to do, because it could go literally any of those three ways. I mean, they could keep what they have, which I think is the most likely. They could trade away, or it's possible, though I think unlikely, they add to the roster. So, but those options are all on the table right now.
Again, you come in and you take advantage of those quote-unquote teams that aren't record-wise better than you, and you win all those series, man, you're right in it. You're sitting there a wild card spot. I think you have to at least strongly try to go for it, whichever you believe would be able to strengthen your team at the time. So, and that's what I think brings on the more intrigue here this season. You look at the last couple of years, and it's like, okay, we're just kind of playing out the year. This stinks, blah, 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 blah. But now you've got something that's real interesting. And I think that's what's going to be most exciting to see what happens, especially this next couple of weeks coming out of this All-Star break.
Scott Warman, we always appreciate talking with you. Thank you, friend.
Always good to chat with you guys. Thank you.
That is studio host on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, Scott Warman, joining the show here on 104.1 FM KMOX. Yep, Home Run Derby is tonight. Then it's the game itself tomorrow. As I mentioned, Brendan Donovan is in that game. We've got the Gas House Gang coming up at 12 o'clock today. Polo Asensio and me with you until 1. We'll be joined by the Cardinals' top pick in the draft. He was number 5 overall, Liam Doyle, college pitcher. He joins the show, and then Derek Gould will be on the show as well. It's all coming up starting at noon today.
Good stuff, and I'll just say my quick unpopular hot take. I like the Home Run Derby.
I like it too. I like it better than the game.
I think it's fun.
I think it's more interesting than the game itself.
Me too.
Also, a text says, with Polo in studio, the over under for Ronji in words is 17. I think I'll introduce the show and that'll be the last you hear from me. So
you'll welcome him in and then you'll say goodbye. That's it.
That's all you need with Polo. Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Just want to remind all of you on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX. We have our question of the week, which we're debuting early. We're going to pretend like it's new tomorrow, but everybody's at the lake, one of the lakes, the Lake of the Ozarks or Table Rock Lake. And so we wanted to pit the two groups against each other. And we want to know, which is the better lake, the Lake of the Ozarks or Table Rock Lake? Guys, Table Rock Lake is winning right now. And it's not close.
Really?
Yes, and I'm a little surprised. Now, someone on Twitter responded and said, Table Rock is cleaner and less crowded, but Ozark is more fun with restaurants and bars and stuff attached. Table Rock is a nice chill lake vibes. The Ozark is for young rich people with big boats.
That also, I mean, it seems kind of fun.
It does
young,
sound
rich
fun
people
with big boats. That seems like your kind of place.
I mentioned it was Mahomes, right? Like a $10 million, $15 million house on a shoreline somewhere.
Because as we all know, the Lake of the Ozarks has more shoreline than the state of California.
Just wild.
That is wild.
I had an alternate question just based on the reports that I have heard from people who have been to the lake.
Yeah.
And my question is the Lake of the Ozarks actually gross? Because all you hear is about muddy water, and maybe you don't want to get in that water, and dead bodies, and I don't know. I haven't been, so I can't say one way or the other. I hear things.
Yeah, I know there are bodies in the lake, but everybody knows that. I think you just accept that. There are definitely bodies in Party Cove, and I think your friends probably go to Party Cove, and that is the gross part of the lake. Everybody knows Party Cove is gross.
That's the one that everybody says is fun.
I think they had to crack down on.
I think it's dirty fun.
I think that it is
kind of like
fun.
New Orleans.
Yes, I think there's a lot of vomit, also like New Orleans.
Well,
but I do think that they had to crack down on Party Cove. If you've been to Party Cove recently, 314-436-7900, have they cracked down on the fun at Party Cove? I heard they had to, because I think people are just falling overboard left and right.
What I always thought was weird is people, when I was living in Chicago, the amount of people who would take a trip down to the Lake of the Ozarks from up there.
Really?
Like that, yeah.
Because it is about, it is equidistant for the most part between St. Louis and Kansas City, which is why Patrick Mahomes, right?
Right.
I always thought the Lake of the Ozarks was a St. Louis thing. Blew my mind to realize that it's also a Kansas City thing. Of course it is, but I just thought it was ours.
It's Missouri's.
It's Missouri's.
Though the whole state can claim it. Hey, we are in the midst of 100 acts of kindness in partnership with Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical. And we're going to be doing this for the remainder of the year. And it's you know, small stuff. You probably heard the promo, us, Amy and I, talking about it. And it can be small, kind acts that you do throughout the course of the day. Or it could be charities. And we do like to highlight charities every now and then. Our charity of the week is the St. Louis Crisis Nursery, which provides a short-term safe place for over 4,000 kids every year whose families are dealing with an emergency, whether it's homelessness, an illness, domestic violence, or, you know, parental stress, like stuff that is overwhelming. So all the services there are free and they are voluntary. And this is a really cool
place.
Really
cool.
It's a really good one.
We talked to someone, gosh, it might have been a couple of years ago now, from St. Louis Crisis Nursery, and you can actually volunteer to help rock babies to sleep. Well, you can hold little babies, because it's something that you don't think about, Ranj, but let's say you find yourself where you've been evicted or you've had to leave for whatever reason your home, and now you are homeless, but you have a baby. You can't care for a baby on the street. And there are mothers who are temporarily homeless, and the St. Louis Crisis Nursery cares for their baby, for their infant, while they're going through that difficult time, or maybe going through rehab or whatever it may be. Kind of hard to wrap your brain around that kind of challenge and struggle in life. But the fact that there are places like the St. Louis Crisis Nursery is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and there's a 24-hour helpline, and it is staffed 24 hours a day, every day of the year.
Yeah.
And there are professionals who are working those phones, and it's just a great charity. And there are a lot of really good St. Louis based charities, which is kind of why we're doing this. I mean, we could very easily, I guess, highlight the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, which does great work, or American Cancer Society, or Heart Association, whatever. But, you know, we really wanted to focus from now until the end of the year on these good local charities. And this is one of them. CrisisNurseryKids.com. That's what listeners, if you're interested in donating or volunteering, just being a part of it, finding out more, CrisisNurseryKids.com.
So speaking of Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical and the 100 Acts of Kindness, a couple of weeks ago, really during the hottest week of the summer, we were challenging people to stop by lemonade stands. And I think I'm personally going to continue this all summer, because Saturday ran into another lemonade stand. They're everywhere. They're everywhere in Kirkwood.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. And it was like different kids. At first, I thought maybe it would be the same kids, because they had a very effective business model, but totally different kids. And they had both regular lemonade and pink lemonade. So
Choices.
So I went pink lemonade last time. So this time I went regular lemonade.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
It was actually very refreshing. These kids are doing a good job of not making it too sweet. You know, sometimes it's a little sweet.
Yeah.
You kind of burns your mouth a little bit.
Exactly.
But guess what the kids still had? They all have Venmo. Mm-hmm. It's a QR code. Now, it's their parents' Venmo. You're not Venmoing the kids, obviously. But it's their parents' Venmo.
You don't want that to come back to you. I have Venmo. What are you Venmoing this child money for?
Why are you paying kids? I think it was the mom. I hope so. It was kind of a mom name. So it looked like a mom. All okay. of a sudden, now I'm like, oh my gosh, my Venmo is going to look so bad. Oh, no. But it was the mom. But anyway, if you want to still stop by lemonade stands, I think we should keep this going all summer.
Do it. Go buy some lemon. I still haven't seen a lemonade stand in 25 years.
Well, that's because they would have to come knock on your door.
That's true. So again, the St. Louis Crisis Nursery. Don't forget about them. CrisisNurseryKids.org. If you do .com, it'll kick the .org. But CrisisNurseryKids.org. My guy, Pat McGann, is a comedian, and he is opening for Sebastian Maniscalco, and he is also performing. I don't think Sebastian is here, no. But Pat is going to be performing at Helium Nightclub this Friday. We're going to talk to Pat McGann, comedian, next on KMOX.